Hello, and welcome to episode number one of The Drop Set. This is my new podcast, the 5-Star Physique Podcast. I am Darren Starr, your host. I am the coach and trainer and sole person behind 5-Star Physique. It is a one-man operation. So what I do is online coaching and contest preparation exclusively. So I don't work with people in person in gyms. I find a lot of coaches do. Sometimes they have their attention divided. Their online clients get kind of, you know, second shrift, not as much attention as the people that they work with in person. I only work with people online. Everything that I do is tailored towards that style of communication. So it's a very different thing. You're not showing up and, you know, you don't have the ability to get in somebody's ear and yell at them and push them a little bit harder. You have to figure out kind of how to do that remotely and then hope that it happens and then have a way to find out if it is or not. You know, is your is each person pushing themselves as hard as they should be? That's the big question. So those are all things that I work with. Those are the questions that keep me awake at night. And those are the things that I worry about and do a lot to fix. So a little about me. I guess we'll start there. So we got a few topics to cover today, but since it's the first one, I'll talk a little bit about me just so you can know who the Yahoo is behind the mic here. My name is Darren. I'm married. I'm old. I'm 39. I live in Knoxville, Tennessee. I like dogs. I play music. I do a little woodworking. And there you go. And I'm a bodybuilder and coach. So, my education background is actually in engineering, and so I bring a lot of the engineering mindset into what I do here. And, you know, engineering is really just about problem solving. And when you're working with human beings and, you know, things that directly impact their quality of life, like a bodybuilding program, you're going to come into a unique set of problems. Sometimes it's time management, sometimes it's dedication, sometimes it's external pressures and forces from other people. But the right approach is not to berate and chastise a person because they can't follow a plan 100% of the way, but to kind of, you know, treat people like human beings because they are, and figure out, you know, is this a problem? How can we fix it? Get some more details. So that's I do a lot less, physics, which I learned a lot of that in engineering school. There's a little bit of that, but really a lot of it is just the engineering mindset and the mentality that goes behind problem solving and troubleshooting. As far as my professional history, I've been, you know, working out. I've been in gyms for all of my adult life. I started knowing nothing, and I've just, you know, largely through trial and error and through people that I've worked with and some formal education, I've learned a thing or two. So I've worked in gyms as a trainer for about 10 years before I gave that up when I relocated to Knoxville. About 3.5 years ago, I was kind of splitting time. I was one of those people who, you know, I was training people in person, but I also had a few online clients, and I thought, you know, I can really kind of make that my full-time thing. And so when I moved to Knoxville, I made the switch, and I've been doing exclusively online training ever since. So no looking back. I dig it. It's a lot of freedom. It's a lot of responsibility. It really is. So, I try to be as accessible as possible to all the people that I work with. The cool thing is, you know, when you've got people that are willing to put in the kind of effort to follow a plan that you write, it really kind of makes me want to work as hard as I can for them as well. So, all right, enough of the mushy stuff. Let's talk about this podcast here. So what it is, what it isn't. There are several other bodybuilding podcasts out there, some better than others. Some of them, I swear, they're just a bunch of bros sitting around a table, swapping stories and just chatting bro science all day long. That is not what you will find here. You also have a bunch of guys who will sit at their microphones and just recite studies and give you clinical evidence and just recite data to you. That is also not what this is. You're going to find something that's a little bit more in between. Just because I like to focus on the practical application of some of those studies, and I'll be totally frank, you know, some bro science actually has some merit to it. Maybe not necessarily, you've got to look, you know, behind face value on some of it. But some of them are like, hey, you know what, that meathead, he might be onto something here. So, you know, through trial and error, I've kind of learned what works and what doesn't. And it's certainly not, not a universal answer. You know, not everything works for everybody. So there are some things that are fairly universal, big picture things like you got to work hard, you got to bust your ass, you got to be consistent. Yeah, okay, we all know that. Those are the things that are pretty much universally applicable. Beyond that, it becomes a lot more personal, though, as far as dietary setup, training setup. You know, there are certain things that definitely work for a larger percentage of the population, but part of being a good coach and a good trainer is figuring out when the exceptions are and hopefully identifying those exceptions very early on so that you know, okay, we need to treat this person a little bit differently. You know, I'd like to think, and I think a lot of coaches treat everybody as though they are unique and individual snowflakes, and I know on a personal level we all are, but at the same time, you can kind of sort people into classifications based on body type, based on history, based on preference. You know, it may be like, hey, you know what, this training style is really what you need. Okay, that's great, but I hate it and I'm not going to do it. All right, cool. Let's take that into consideration. You know, those are all things, those are all balls that I have to have in the air and juggle those. So it's tricky at times, but we make it work. So, you know, what I want to do is focus on topics that are relevant to bodybuilders. And one of the things that I'm going to talk about today is, what is a bodybuilder? Let's define that. So, not to jump ahead, you know, I want to focus on things like, you know, how do you go about ensuring that your training intensity is where it needs to be? And if it's not, how do you fix that? How do you quantify something that can't really be quantified? Meaning, you know, the number of weights that you, the number of pounds that you lift on a certain exercise, and the number of reps you do, and the number of sets you do, we like those things because those are very concrete terms, and you can track those down, you can log those, and you can see those numbers increase from one workout to the next. It paints an incomplete picture because there are other variables that you're not logging there. How slow or fast are your reps? You know, how easy was it? Those kind of things. So developing a slightly more comprehensive view of what intensity is and how that changes our definition of progressive overload as well. So hopefully we'll be able to, when we talk about things like that, when you talk about things like sleep, things like macro tracking, all that stuff, my hope is that you'll be able to listen to something like this and walk away, maybe not with an entirely new outlook on everything in your life, but hopefully you can pick up a little nugget or two here and there that you'll find useful and something that you can apply to your daily routine as a bodybuilder. So let's talk about bodybuilding, what it means to be a bodybuilder and what it doesn't. I once heard a definition, somebody that I was in the gym with, and he was a competitor, big dude, and he was just talking with his buddies, and he said something to the effect of, I don't think you can call yourself a bodybuilder unless you've won your class in an open division at a show. And I'm just like, excuse me, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense at all. It's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, it's a little elitist, I guess you could say, but it also does a disservice to all the people who put in hard work but just haven't gotten to that level yet, you know? I mean, and it's not like you have to go through and pay your dues and commit to something for a certain amount of time and be a certain achieve a certain level of success before you can magically call yourself a bodybuilder. What a stupid thing. But, you know, this podcast is for bodybuilders. And so let's define what that means. And my definition of it, I will give credit where credit is due. And I think, you know, bodybuilding.com has done more to put that word into the mainstream than pretty much anything else. I have my issues with that website. I mean, I think they're trying to sell stuff, and I think they put a little bit too much emphasis on the supplementation side of things. But still, as far as turning bodybuilding into something that's mainstream and something that's accessible and something that's not just, you know, giant, juiced up, 280-pound guys on stage throwing each other around in thongs. But, you know, the sport itself has also evolved into something that, you know, now we have a bikini division, we have a physique division, et cetera. We've got women's physique. We've got, you know, figure's been around for a long time, but we've got all these other divisions. So you could say it's kind of the dumbing down of bodybuilding, but I would say it's more of, you know, opening it up to a larger audience and making it something that's more acceptable in the mainstream, which is cool because we all win. You know, when more people are involved and more people accept and understand what we do, it's a win for everybody. So my definition of a bodybuilder is anyone who is willing to commit to some kind of a routine to improve their physique in an aesthetic way, which means competitor or not, you know, if that's what you're doing, you're a bodybuilder. You are bodybuilding. You are building your body. Okay, I think I've beaten the definition of that compound word to death, but I just want to make sure that, you know, we know who the audience is here. The people that I'm talking to, you know, we'll certainly cover things that are specific to competitors, but, you know, by and large, I'm going to talk about the general concepts that'll be useful to everybody. You know, whether you compete or not, you know, learning how to improve your training intensity is key. Making sure that you're accurately tracking your macros is key. Understanding how to improve the quality of sleep that you get, how to determine how many days off per week you need is good. How to improve your cardio efficiency. These are things that are helpful to everybody, whether you're going to compete or not. I probably won't be talking a whole lot about how to pick the right suit for you, just because... Well, for guys, it's an easy topic, and for women, you're best off talking to a suit designer. So, and you know, realistically, I think, well, we'll come back to that. The big thing that differentiates those two categories, you know, competitors or not, is, you know, are you going to compete, obviously? And it's a big question that a lot of people ask. And, you know, I field contact requests through my website every day. And, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I want to look like I could compete, but I don't necessarily want to yet. I don't think. Maybe not. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. I do. You know, a lot of people just don't know. They haven't made up their mind. They don't know enough about it. And I think part of, you know, when you start training with something like this, you immerse yourself a little bit more into the culture. You naturally, you either hang around competitors, you follow more of them on social media, you learn a little bit more about what it's about. I think you get a skewed view in that way because you don't really know what it's about until you go through it yourself. Otherwise, by and large, you're getting kind of the glamorous view of it. And it's very much like that iceberg meme that we've all seen online where, like, you know, 5% of it is above water and the remaining 95% is underwater. So the 5% of bodybuilding that's glamorous, those are all the stage photos and everything. Everything else is a slog. It's waking up early. It's busting your ass. It's being hungry. It's being sick of cardio. It's just having a body that hurts all the time. You know, it's not glamorous. You know, why should you compete or why shouldn't you compete? That's the big question. So, you know, there are a lot of valid reasons to compete. You know, for some people, it's as simple as, it sounds like something that's fun to do. I want to give it a shot and I'll go through it and I'll commit to the process. I'll get up on stage. And then, you know, once it's all over, I'll look back on it and see if it's something I want to do again. Cool. Nothing wrong with that. It also gives you a chance to meet people that are like-minded. You go backstage and suddenly it's like you're in your own little world. There's all these people that are involved in this same niche sport that you are. And suddenly you've gone from being, you know, one of the only people in your gym that knows what you're doing to you're surrounded by a whole bunch of people that not only know what you're doing, but probably have more experience doing that than you do. I mean, that's kind of cool. You know, it's a good way to learn about stuff and to get more ideas, you know, hear other people's experiences and just get some kind of sense that you're not alone. So I think the camaraderie of competing can be a very real thing. You know, you're always going to meet assholes back there just because, you know, with humanity, there's always assholes around. But by and large, my experience has been the overwhelming majority of people at shows are just really nice people. I think that, you know, having a positive attitude kind of goes hand in hand with being a successful bodybuilder. You can't just carry around all that negative energy with you all the time and expect your physique to cooperate with you in a productive way. You've got to maintain a pretty positive outlook most of the time. So, you know, another good reason to compete, it's added accountability. I think if you compete because without that date on the calendar, you cannot commit to and follow a plan, I think that's a big problem. So it can't be your only source of accountability, but added accountability, if it can help you make a better decision here and there, just thinking like, oh yeah, I've got that show coming up. It's only 8 weeks away now. Yeah, I'm going to put the donuts down. Okay, good choice. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. But you know, it can't be the only source, the only thing that keeps you going. Like, if I didn't have that show, I'd be sleeping until 8. I wouldn't go to the gym. I'd eat whatever I want. Wrong answer. So I really encourage people to, you know, if they're on the fence, do I want to, do I not? Don't. Commit to a plan first. Follow it and learn about the process, the dieting, the training, all of that stuff. And dare I say it, enjoy the process, fall in love with the process. And if you do that, then the show is just gravy. You know, it's one of those things then that it becomes something that you add onto the calendar. But whether it's there or not, you're going to continue doing this thing. You're going to continue seeing these regular improvements and changes in your physique. And that's what it really needs to be all about. You know, invalid reasons for competing, reasons that, you know, maybe invalid is a strong word, but less positive or less productive reasons for wanting to compete. If you want to win at all costs. I mean, why? You know, there isn't a lot of glory that comes from winning a bodybuilding show, I can tell you that. And unless you compete at the very, very highest level, there's no money to be found in it at all. Quite the opposite. It's going to cost you a lot. So, you know, that if you're going in there and saying, I want to win, that's great. But you are going to not only need to be better than everybody else, but you're also going to need to be lucky, because judging can be kind of a shit show in bodybuilding. It really can. There's no real way around it. And it's because there's no accountability for judges. There's no transparency. If you've ever seen a judge's scorecard, a judge basically is just asked to look at a lineup of people and rank them by number in what order they think they should place. So while there are all these judging criteria, you know, size, symmetry, conditioning, presentation, etc., you're not scored in those categories. All that you see is the overall score. So there's, you know, if anybody wants to go back and look at the judges' scoring and see, well, you know, how do they get to that number? No, sorry, you can't do it. So that's something, you know, that's a topic that I will delve into later. You know, how to fix the scoring system and just the construction of shows in general, and how to make them something that's it needs to be a fair balance between a good show for the viewer and a good experience for the competitor as well. And right now it's not. That's a topic for a later day, but just know that, you know, if you want to win, just understand that judging is, to say it's a little sketchy at times is being kind. So I always encourage people not to put a whole lot of faith in the results. Don't put too much stock in the outcome of a show. The only outcome that matters is, how did you compare to your previous show? As long as you are continuing to improve, because you can win a show, you can win your class because you're the only person that shows up. First place trophy, great. And then you go to another show and you've got stiff competition and you come in fourth, but you're in better shape. So you'd be like, oh man, this sucked. I did way worse at this show. Well, yeah. I mean, you've got to compare your conditioning. You've got to compare your progress, and your progress is not your placing. That's the big thing. Other reasons that are less compelling for wanting to compete. Someone said I should. Well, does that person know anything about you? Because, I mean, you've got to know what you're getting into. Or, you know, another thing is, well, everybody else is competing. So that kind of goes along with a valid reason, though. It sounds like fun. And, you know, maybe it is. So if everybody else is competing and you're hearing good things from those people, talk to them a little bit more. Get a little bit more information on it and see then if it's something that still sounds appealing after that. So it's important to know what goes into competing. So, you know, you're already involved in the process. You're training, you're dieting, your conditioning is improving, you're putting on size, whatever your current goal is. Then you're like, I think I want to take this to the next level and compete. So, you know, what's different? What changes when you go from somebody who's doing this because they enjoy it to somebody who's, you know, doing it because they enjoy it, but then they're going to be competing as well? The biggest thing that I think people underestimate, the biggest change, is pressure. The pressure of having that show date on the calendar, I've seen it break a lot of people, because they just, you know, that for whatever reason, some people respond great to pressure, other people don't. So knowing how you respond to pressure, and, you know, the pressure is different for all contexts. So if you're going to give a big presentation, that's going to be a certain kind of stress and pressure. Getting ready for a show may be an entirely different kind. So you can't necessarily conflate the two. But having some sense of how you might respond to that, just know that having that date out there on the calendar, and each week it's getting a little bit closer and a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And then you're always going to be looking at yourself saying, am I ready? Am I going to be ready? Am I going to be ready? I'm not lean enough. I'm not lean enough. I'm not big enough. Oh, crap. And, you know, I mean, that is standard. Everybody does that. Everybody does that. But just know that having that show on the calendar and having it, you know, get closer and closer and closer, it can really freak some people out in ways that they don't necessarily expect when they first start this venture. Another thing that goes into competing that differentiates it from the what I would call the civilian population would be the expense. This expense, there are some things that are gender neutral. So, you know, you have to pay for the entry fee for your show, membership card for your organization. Like if you're going to be in an NPC show, great. $120 right there. Now that's good for a calendar year, but if you're going to compete just once, you're not getting a lot of bang for your buck out of that. So you've got to pay that in addition to the $50 to $100 entry fee for the show, plus any crossover fees if you want to compete in more than one class. Your TAN, which whether you do it yourself, side note, not recommended, or you pay the hefty cost to have the people at the show spray you, way recommended. That's a cost that's worth it, but it's got to be factored in. Gender-specific costs, so guys, you got to pay for a suit. You get easy outs there. I mean, that's, you know, $20, $30, $35, so pretty easy. Women, it's pricey. You know, you could easily drop close to $1,000 on a suit. You can get some for cheaper than that, but still, they're going to be a lot more expensive than what the guys spend. You can get a used secondhand suit off the rack, just very plain Jane for like, you know, $150, $200, but still, it's a good chunk of change. Ladies, you got to take care of hair and makeup as well. You can do it yourself, but again, you got to know what you're doing there. So it might be worth it to invest in having the pros do it for you at the show the day of. So the expenses really add up. Travel, hotels. It's kind of a big deal. Yeah. And if you get hooked, just know that those expenses are going to continue incurring. And if you're expecting some supplement company or clothing manufacturer to swoop out of the sky and sponsor you, don't bet on it. Stranger things have happened, but you can't expect that to happen. And if it does happen, it means that you made a right choice and competing is probably for you. So, but typically, yeah, you're going to cover your own costs, and they are significant. The other thing that goes into competing, and this kind of goes hand in hand with the added pressure of it, is the impact on your life. So it can have a real dramatic impact on your quality of life. And I know a lot of people do a fantastic job of balancing their prep with their life. And some people, you know, I'm working with someone right now, and she's made it very clear, like, I'm okay with not being as conditioned as I possibly can, as long as I come out of this prep with my sanity and with my family not hating me. I'm like, that is totally valid, because I have seen a lot of times where that outcome does not happen, where you do lose your sanity and your family hates you because you're just not present. You're always at the gym doing cardio. You don't go to functions with them. You kind of isolate yourself. You turn yourself into a hermit and you just become a completely antisocial, you know, golem creature. It's not good. It's not good. Now, for some people, that sacrifice is worth it. But just know that, you know, by and large, when it comes to competing, it's kind of assumed that some level of that comes with the territory. There's a lot of sacrifice that is expected. And it's not just the time commitment, because you know, the training is non-negotiable. The food prep is non-negotiable. You can do things to become more efficient in that make it a little bit more doable. But still, it's likely, unless you're unless your significant other is on board with this as well, maybe they're competing as well. Great. Awesome. So it's something you can do together. It helps. Otherwise, you're going to be doing a lot of stuff on your own. You're going to be leaving them behind for quite a bit to do this stuff on your own. You're not going to be eating the same stuff, maybe not eating together at all. You're going to be irritated whenever they eat something that's tasty. you know, you're going to be hangry. You're going to snap at them. You're going to be a dick. It can add a lot of stress to your life, not just, you know, internally in your brain being stressed out about the show coming up, but it can really put a strain on, you know, relationships. Some people will notice that their job performance suffers a little bit. You're going to be more tired. And if you have a job that's physically demanding, it's going to be an extra challenge there as well. So all things to consider. So the big thing, though, is, like I said, you've got to enjoy the process. You've got to, I think, outside of the context of any show, you've got to be self-motivated from within. And for some people, that's really easy. And for other people, they need a little kick in the pants. And maybe it's not putting a show on the calendar, because if you need something like that to scare you into following a plan, I think there are other issues that we should probably address first. But start in on something, you know, start a plan, start following some kind of a diet, even if it's just something generic that you find online. Cool. It's a starting point. And then as long as you're objective in how you look at yourself and how you assess how it works and you give it time, you know, you follow it well, and you give it time to actually do something. Give it a few weeks. See how you feel. See how you perform. Take some measurements. Take some photos and assess. And try and look at yourself in a less emotional and more objective way, which is something that's all very difficult for all of us. But it's a skill that we should all work on, I think. But having that motivation to do this on your own, without necessarily having to get ready for a show, being able to do that first is key. That internal motivation, you know, you need to be driven from within, not by external forces, not by, you know, a sense that you need to be validated in some way or that you need something else to push you or motivate you to do it. Do it for you. Do it because you want to improve your physique. That's all there is to it. It doesn't necessarily make you a better person, but I can guarantee you, as you go through this process, you're going to learn things about yourself. And I think anytime we can, you know, take time out from our day and our routine and stop and assess what's going on and actually learn something about ourselves, that's pretty cool. And I think a lot of people throughout their lives miss out on those opportunities. So if you get nothing else out of bodybuilding, but that, I would say that's a victory. So take that to the bank. All right. I think that's it. I don't have anything else that I wanted to cover for today. So I'm going to put a close onto this inaugural episode of The Drop Set. My plan is to get this up weekly, so we'll see how that goes. Eventually, you will find this on iTunes if all goes well. We'll be on SoundCloud. So in the meantime, I am Darren Starr. You can find me online at 5starphysique.com. That's Star with two R's. Follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/5starphysique, or on Instagram at 5starfit. Once again, Star with two R's. Thanks for listening. Check you next week.